Blog Talk Radio.
Fathers, mothers.
I want to welcome everybody today to the Family Matters Show here on BTR World of Inc. Network. Be prepared to call in or to chat with us in the chat room here at Blog Talk Radio at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on July 13th. And it's myself, V.S. Grenier, with my co-host, Keisha Burcham. And we're here to talk with you guys about teen dating and how to be safe. It's definitely going to be an interesting show. We're going to cover a lot of topics, and I even have a personal experience to share with you, not one of my that happened to me myself personally, but to a friend of mine a few years back. So definitely tune in, and if you have any stories to share with us or any questions you'd like to ask, like I said, you can catch us in the chat room, or you can call us at 714-242-5259. Again, that was 714-242-5259. Welcome, Keisha. It's good to be here again with you tonight.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
So just so everybody knows a little bit about you, and then I'll, of course, say a little bit about myself. Can you just, let, just in case any new listeners know a little bit about your background and who you are and what you do?
Well, I am a middle school guidance counselor, and I have been for 23 years. And I am also an NLP life coach. I have probably attended every in-service for teens and preteens that there is. I'm a Seven Habits of Highly Effective Teens trainer and have recently attended a seminar, which is very much on this topic, Safe Dates. I'm trained in that curriculum, which is just mind-blowing, some of the stats and some of the ideas that some of our youth may have, perpetuated largely by society and some of our own families. I'm also a mom and a grandmother. I have a 29-year-old daughter and three grandchildren. And that is who I am in reference to this show.
Yeah, and then of course, those who have listened to the World of Inc. Network, I'm V.S. Grenier, and I am a award-winning editor and children's author, and I'm also the owner and founder of Stories for Children magazine and its parent company, Stories for Children Publishing, and I also do the Stories for Children show, the Writing Mama show, and fill in here and there on the other shows when I need to. So that's who I am. So basically tonight, just like I had mentioned before, we're going to be talking about teen dating and how to stay safe. And I, obviously, being a grandmother and already having a daughter, you've been through this, Keisha, and are watching, you know, or waiting actually for when your grandkids go through this to support your daughter in doing it. I have a 15-year-old son, so I'm like smack in the middle of the dating scene now. So it's definitely, you know, a subject that's dear to both of our hearts, you know, especially if you being a counselor with the children and stuff as well. So what kind of prompted me why I talk about this subject this month on our show was basically because, like I've been telling you before the show started, I had a friend 10 years ago who actually went through a really bad situation. And I kind of want to share that with our listeners tonight just so they can kind of understand why I feel talking about dating is important. I know when I was growing up and stuff, dating at that time had changed a lot from my parents were dating. I mean, my mom, you know, when she was growing up, group dating and double dating was a lot more common, which was definitely, you know, like that through the 60s and 70s. But by the 80s, I noticed for my generation, we like to date more, you know, one-on-one, you know, just you and your boyfriend or your girlfriend going out. And unfortunately, I think that created a lot of bad situations for teens in many ways because you didn't have that group environment to help keep you a little bit safer. you tend to get yourself into a little bit riskier decision-making type situations. And unfortunately, one of my friends paid for that. And what's sad about her story is she had grown up knowing the young man that she was dating her whole life. So both parents had been friends, and so her and the guy she ended up dating had grown up basically from diapers into their teenage and into the young adult years with each other. And they actually had been dating for a year. They went to the same church with each other. So the family saw each other every Sunday, you know, at their church meetings. They were in the same youth group with each other. And after years dating, you know, they were like how most Christian parents would want to see their kids, you know, held hands, you know, quick kisses, that's about it. Never got really physical or anything. And she ended up going to a party with this young man. Again, her parents trusted him because they had known him for such a long time. And she asked him to go get her a Coke. And she didn't think anything of it when he brought her the Coke and it was already open. You know, why would she? She'd been dating him for a year. She grew up with this guy, knew him, went to church with him. And unfortunately, he had laced her Coke. And she woke up later, hours later, undressed and in an unknown room, not knowing what happened to her. And she happened to be date raped.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is, well, you know, it's so common, though. I mean, statistics tell us that approximately 1 in every 8 women will be raped in her lifetime, and most of those are not strangers. They're acquaintances, friends, or dates, even boyfriends or girlfriends, and they're usually teenagers. It's really a pretty frightening statistic, and when this happens to a girl, especially if it's her boyfriend, how do you go about reporting that? You know, there's that fear. Who's going to believe me? I was on a date with him. You know, how is it rape if he's my boyfriend? How is it rape if it's your spouse? But it can be. And as drugs are concerned, and the lacing of, you know, that can, you know, all be proven by blood tests and all that. But again, when you're dealing with a teenage girl, the last thing she wants to do is make a scene, have to report this, get all the gossip going, have to tell parents who are friends. It can be so awkward, particularly when you do know somebody like that, that it often shuts the girl down. And very often these things go unreported for years and years and years, if ever. Did the young lady, I mean, it sounds to me like being drugged and then waking up like that by herself, evidently, might have been traumatic enough for her to tell. Did she tell anybody at the time?
She did. She was actually really good about coming forward and telling her parents, and that's how I actually found out, because her mom called me, because her mom was just totally distraught and called me and was like, you know, you need to call her. She needs a friend right now. And went, you know, and I was right there right away. And, you know, and I did a lot of things to help get her mind off of it, you know, to get her back into living her life, because I know it's very easy for women not to do that. But it really surprised me because, I mean, I know when I was dating in high school and when I was dating in college, I was very cautious about ever accepting an open drink from somebody that I didn't know or had only been dating for a very short period of time, because I was very, when I, which is what, you know, exactly happened to my friend. I mean, at that time, you know, the Spanish, yeah, right, Spanish fly, I'm trying to show you, the date rape drug, the Spanish fly, was really, you know, it was a big topic during the 80s and 90s. Being a real problem on the dating scene. And so I was aware of it. And so when this happened to my friend, I was shocked. I was like, oh, my gosh, you've been dating this guy for a year. I mean, like, whoa, you know, where did this come from? And, you know, obviously it doesn't matter. And that's what was a real eye-opener for me, that it doesn't matter how long you've known somebody or whatever. I mean, it can happen any time. First date, you know, 100th date, doesn't matter. You know, like you said, your spouse, whatever. I mean, you just, whatever happens, people snap and they do some really stupid stuff. And so, yeah, luckily she came forward. It was a huge mess. It was something that was hard for her to live down, which is what most women are afraid of,
exactly.
What you talked about. And the scary thing is, you know, I know when I was dating, you know, my mom would let me kind of go out off of, like, you know, group dates when I was 12 years old, where, you know, it was a bunch of us, you know, even number of guys or girls, but it had to be like, you know, 8 of us total, you know, so like, you know, be 4 couples, you know, to go to the movies, and she'd drive and drop us off. But it seems like because when I talked to my mom, I was like, well, I couldn't date until I was like 16, 17 years old. And it seems like the bar keeps dropping, you know, for, you know, to be one-on-one. Because I have, you know, not my son, but I have seen with other friends of mine who have teenagers that they've looked like their 12-year-old and their boyfriend or girlfriend go to the movie by themselves or their 13-year-old. I'm starting thinking, okay, you know, we're kids are growing up faster than they used to be, you know, getting a lot more freedom than they used to be. But unfortunately, I don't think things are scarier now than when, you know, their grandparents, their parents, you know, their older brothers and sisters, whatever, were out dating. Because I know, like, for me versus when my sister, who just, you know, was married just a few years ago, I mean, because we're 15 years apart, it was very different from you at 15 years, you know, before she started dating to when she was dating.
Mm-hmm. And well, just, it's a lot more complicated world now than it was before.
Yeah.
And I think there's false safety in cell phones. Well, I can call my child and check in and know exactly where they are at all times. That's not necessarily, you know, the biggest thing. And I think, you know, I hate to blame the media, so I won't blame the media, but I will say that a lot of music and TV programs and many of these I watch and listen to, again, I'm not condemning them, but I would say that they encourage a lot more promiscuity than I think Andy Griffith did, you know. I think that when you watch some of the shows today and hear some of the music and see, not that I'm for censorship, but there's a lot of language that wasn't used when I was growing up in the 70s and early 80s. There are ideas that are just kind of assumed. Shows like Bachelor and Bachelorette, which, yes, can be entertaining, but although they don't really show anything, you're led to believe that there are several sexual encounters in this little game that they play, you know, and that wasn't always something that you would blatantly talk about. You certainly wouldn't put it on TV. So I think that our kids are exposed to very mature sexual situations very early, and you're right, they don't have the mental capacity to process what is, you know, what they're being told. Hopefully many parents are able to guide their kids at home about, okay, what you're watching is entertainment, and this is where you need to be careful. But again, those are young minds, and they're very impressionable. And kids, you know, like we said before, want to fit in. I think a lot of them assume that everybody's doing it. Everybody's not. But if the thought is that they are, they might be more inclined to take things further. And on these single dates, yes, it is easier to get into something that you wouldn't in a group. And also, teenagers today, and this started coming to light, I guess, about 5 or 6 years ago in our school district, that a lot of teens have different ideas about what sex really is. And a lot of tweens even, and teens, believe that if they do not have intercourse, they are still a virgin. So you have a whole lot of oral sex and anal sex and all kinds of sex that they have decided really isn't sex, but has many of the same consequences, many of the same repercussions, all of the same things as intercourse. There's really not that big a difference, but some teens will convince themselves that there is so that they can say that they are still a virgin, they haven't done this or that yet.
You know what, you just touched on a really great thing, because I had mentioned to you before that there was two articles that I had come across, too, when I was researching for the show, and one of them is Teen Dating, a Mom's Guide, which is on, just so anybody wants to go look it up, it's on WebMD, but it was actually in Good Housekeeping, and it's by Barbara Weichler, and one of the first things that she talks about when, you know, she's talking about, you know, teens and how it's changed and that, you know, dating isn't how it used to be. So us as parents need to get over it that, you know, it's different now. I mean, we don't want to think it is, but it is. And she talks about that, and I actually want to read exactly what she says. She goes, even though kids are still pairing, this is what she says. She goes, even though kids are still pairing off in the same age group when going out and dating, the relationships are getting serious. Between ages 12 and 14, there's more and more reverse sexual relationships for these teens. So, yeah, and she goes exactly into that. You know, most kids seem to be running the bases backwards. So what we used to consider third base is now first base. And what's first base is now third base. You know, and of course that was like kissing, fondling, you know, home run was, you know, sex. And I think it's kind of interesting because exactly what you're saying. And it's like, you're right. They have it in their head that, you know, what we used to think, how we used to vision things or how we used to classify things, kids are classifying different. You know, it's exactly like that. You know, you're saying, you know, you're still a virgin. If you haven't had actual intercourse, it's okay if you're doing oral sex or anal sex or whatever, because I haven't had actual intercourse, you know, in the traditional sense. So that's interesting.
Which is
really
kind of shocking to, I think, those of us that are at a different age, shall we say, because those are the things that probably were much more taboo to talk about or to enter into than actual intercourse when I was growing up and teenage. I mean, you really wouldn't have thought about it that way.
I wouldn't have. Yeah, I mean, and it still, if you talk to people from my generation, you know, and I know you and I are only a few years apart, you know, exactly. To us, that's a very taboo subject, and it doesn't seem to be with these younger generations, which is, you know, really frightening. The other thing,
isn't
too, I mean, you brought, what was that?
Right, I would say those things are not necessary. They have this idea that they're safer. Well, I can't get pregnant from those things.
Right.
Well, not directly, no. But can you still get diseases? Oh, yes. Can you still ruin your reputation? Oh, yes. Can you still get your heart broken because you have let down the boundaries that are so important in those dating relationships? Yes. And I think that a lot of times kids don't realize, and I say kids, tweens and teens, you know, I think sometimes they don't realize how wrapped up their hearts really do get in these things. And how casual some people view them. And there is a great amount of emotional pain that can come out of these relationships, whether they had intercourse or not. It's not safer. And I'm not, you know, Miss Anti-Sex, complete abstinence. I think abstinence is a great idea if you can pull it off. I really do. But I'm realistic enough to know that most teenagers probably will engage in some sexual activity before they're married. I think they can avoid diseases and headaches if they don't. But again, so I think that the safety factor is so very, very important. I don't want to push, you know, condoms, but if the child is, you know, if that's going on, I think we have to be responsible. And I think a lot of times, particularly young ladies, and I'm always going to speak from that perspective because that's the only one I know, but I think we get wrapped up in this whole he loves me thing, and we almost get set up for a lot of disappointment and heartache. I mean, chances are the first guy you think you're in love with is not going to be the man for the rest of your life. And I think sometimes we will tolerate, or many times, statistics kind of show us that there's a lot of tolerating of what is really misbehavior because of this desire to have a boyfriend, to have somebody, particularly girls that may not have good relationships at home or have seen somewhat abusive relationships at home. There are a lot of red flags when you're dating, and this is both sides of the fence, now girls and boys, where you can tell if a relationship is likely to become abusive, and it doesn't necessarily have to be physically abusive. It can be emotionally abusive. But if you start dating somebody that becomes extremely dependent and possessive, that's a red flag, and you need to really take a look at where that's going. When you have to account for your every move, you need to know where that's going, because that's not a good sign. When you find that you're isolated, your boyfriend, or sometimes it's a girlfriend, wants you to have, drags you away from your family and your friends, and you're only to be with them because they love you so. That is not love. That is possessiveness. That's emotional abuse. And some of them will even go so far as to, if somebody tries to break off the relationship, well, a couple of things. They'll cry. They're so sorry. It'll never happen again. There'll be a nice little honeymoon, and yes, it will happen again. Or they'll pull the I'm going to kill myself, or you don't love me, play the guilt card. Anytime the relationship becomes manipulative, frightening, you can't have your own life, you know, notice that early on, because that's not going to change. You know, you're not going to change that person. That's who they are. And you really don't want to get in too deep in a relationship like that, because they're real hard to get out of. And people like that can be very, and you can fall in love pretty easily.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And, I mean, I've had my share of good relationships. I had my share of bad relationships, you know, and I also don't want to give my whole entire past, of course. But, you know, one thing that always crosses my mind, and and I see it, maybe just because I watch with my parents, because I'm always asking, you know, again, I only have a teenage son, so he's going to absolutely hate me as all my although my friends say that, I keep bringing him up too much on the show, but unfortunately he is a teenager, and that's what most issues deal with, is his age group. But, you know, I'm always asking him, you know, is there a girl you like at school? And I know he hates it, and I know, and he recently had a girlfriend that he broke up with, but, you know, and I'm always asking him questions, and I always ask, well, you know, what does she think of your family, or, you know, this and that. And he hated me bugging him, but, you know, and I remember when I mentioned it to my parents, you know, his grandparents, that, you know, he likes somebody and he had a girlfriend. And I remember my dad looking at me, he's like, what? He has a girlfriend? And this, and he'd first, you know, started dating her when he was 14. And he's like, he's only 14. And I'm just looking, I'm like, and it made me realize, because when I was in high school, you know, it's different when you're in college. When you're in college, you know, your parents pretty much expect you dating. But in high school, for some reason, I think, like, parents, a good majority of them, at least mine did, tended to shut off, like, oh, I'm still young, I'm still a kid, and I wouldn't be interested in boys, I guess. And so my dad was completely oblivious to the fact I had boyfriends, and mostly because I didn't bring them home. And I think that's one thing that I've noticed has changed from, at least when, from the 60s and 70s, you know, the adults who are from that huge baby boomer generation, you know, and into the Generation X, you know, which are the next set of parents out there, that I think is where the disconnect is, because some of the X generation at that point in time, which is the generation I'm a part of anyways, which is, you know, the kids from the 80s and the 90s, that, and I'm talking early 90s, not late 90s, that when we started dating, unlike our parents who, when they had a boyfriend, everybody knew, and the boyfriend came over, and they went to the dances together, and everybody knew they went to the dances together. So it got around that you were seeing whoever. But when I was growing up, it seemed like a lot of my friends who weren't supposed to be dating still had boyfriends at school. They just didn't go home and talk about it. The guy never called them. It all happened in school, the relationship, which is really scary. And I see that even now, because when I talk to my son, and I just, from the comments he makes, not so much because him and I have a good conversation, but I know it's like with his other friends, that tends to be kind of the scenario still, that I think a lot of parents don't realize that their kids have a boyfriend or girlfriend because it's only active during those school hours when they're seeing each other, or when they, you know, go off in like a group and they're like, oh, I'm just going off with my friends to go miniature golf or whatever. But it's really a group dating situation that the parents are unaware of, because they just think it's a bunch of kids getting together just having fun. And that's where I think it's changed.
Well, I think it's a shame that the parents aren't aware, because I do think as parents we run this real tight rope of being cool and then embarrassing our children. They're so scared we're going to say something that will embarrass them that they sure don't want to bring this person that they like around us. But I think that also goes back to, you know, trying to have, and goodness gracious, it's a real effort to have a good relationship with a tween or a teen. As a parent, you can't do very much right unless you've got your wallet in hand and you're at the mall. There are very few things that you can really get right. But I do think that when you're not directly talking about their boyfriend or their girlfriend, that you can look for opportunities, maybe while you're watching TV or at a movie or a situation in the news, to bring up something that may or may not be going on, just to have the discussion. You can turn on the TV any night and see some kind of a dating scenario that's gone wrong or that's in disarray, or some of it's even on Disney, and just maybe use the opportunity to say, well, you know, what would you do if something like that happened to you? Or, I mean, do you know anybody that acts like that? Or, you know, do these things, is this realistic for your life and your school? Do these things really happen? And if they can talk about it kind of in a third-person way, about other people on TV, it kind of opens the door for conversation that isn't threatening, for conversation that's not about them. But it gives you some dialogue where you can be really open and kind of see where they are. They kind of see where you are. And you may end up having some real fruitful conversations that down the road are really helpful.
but they didn't come across as lecturing because nobody wants to hear a lecture. But if you can manipulate a conversation out of something that's happening around you as opposed to you, then sometimes that's a good way to get in your kid's head and kind of see where they're coming from and maybe head off questions that they might not ask you for fear of a lecture or for fear you might embarrass them. So I think the media can be a real, real helpful in that situation.
Right. Yeah, here's something else, too, that I've come across, and, I mean, definitely was, you know, something I saw a lot with. I saw it when I was in school. I'm pretty sure you saw it when you were back in school, too. But I saw it definitely with my sister who's 15 years younger than me. Is it seems that a lot of people think, oh, dating happens in the evening. Oh, you know, they're going to get together at night. They're going to go see a movie or whatever. I mean, because that's typically, you know, how adults date. And kind of how it was, I guess, back in the 50s and 60s, at least from what I get from my parents when they talked to me about when I was growing up and they talked about when they were dating to me when I was a teen. But I noticed that kids tend to pair off a lot in the afternoon. Sometimes they actually ditch school to go and do their teenage dating whatever thing because it'd be funner to go hang out with a boyfriend or girlfriend versus be in class, which obviously really
opens up the door. Yeah, and the parents are both working now. You know, back in our day, well, not necessarily my family, but there was somebody at home. Where would you go? Well, now those parents are working. The house is empty.
Exactly. And I think of that, and I know that, you know, when I was growing up, obviously, you know, pagers was pretty much, you were lucky if it was a teenager if you had a pager. Cell phone was out of the question because those were still hitting the market, and I'm really dating myself now. But nowadays, you know, kids are like, what's a pager? Well, don't worry about it. But, you know, most kids have a cell phone. And even though you can get a hold of, my son's laughing in the background, like, oh, I don't know what a pager is. anyways, even though your kid has a cell
phone.
We didn't
have pagers either, so.
Yeah, well, I did. I had a pager, but I didn't always call when my page came across and my mom was trying to get a hold of me. I just ignored it. Oh, I didn't get that message. You know, but kids can still do that with their cell phones. And I know, like, with my son, his cell phone's off half the time, even though he has it with him, because he doesn't think to turn it on. So even though, and I think sometimes I worry, and I think that's what parents understand, yeah, there's more ways technically you can get a hold of your kid. Doesn't mean you're going to or they're going to respond. No. So it's great they have a cell phone, but they can turn it off or ignore it.
You got to make some real clear rules about that. You know, chances are you're paying a phone bill. And you will have that phone on. And the first time I try to contact you and I don't get a response, I'm coming looking. And when I do find you, the phone will be mine for a while. I don't pay for that phone, so you can, you know, diss me and put me on hold. You will use that phone to communicate with me. I think you've got to have some really, really clear rules there. And turned it off is just not an option. It's just not an option. And even if they are paying for it, if they're 16 and they're living with you and you're making the rules, you need to know where your kid is. And you, I think you have that right to for them to, you know, keep that line of communication open. Barring some kind of an emergency, you should be able to reach them if you have concerns about their safety.
Right. I totally agree with you. And, you know, and that's the one thing I think about, too, because, again, like we were just talking about, how parents, you know, most parents are both working outside of the home. It's rare that you have a situation like myself where I actually do work out of my house, so I am home. Or parents who are home just because you're able to have a parent be a stay-at-home parent. So it gives, obviously, kids more opportunity to go somewhere and to get themselves into trouble. And even though you can still get a hold of them and check on them, I mean, most parents didn't think in the afternoon to call their kid. Because they're like, well, if they have their phone, most schools, they'll take the kid's phone away if it's turned on during school hours. So it's a perfect excuse for the kid to be completely off the grid, I guess, is where I'm going. And so in that scenario, now nobody knows, one, where they're at. You know, no one's going to even think about getting a hold of you because you should be one place and you're not. And so now you're out with your boyfriend, your girlfriend. You know, maybe there's a group of you that a group of couples, you know, that have taken off together that ditch school to go do whatever or go hang out wherever. So in a situation like that, I mean, my first, of course, and I'm sure your first response is going to be, well, don't do it, don't be stupid. You know, that's number one to stay safe.
Yeah.
But we know kids do it. So even though we
don't. Yeah, absolutely. Well, they're going to try. They're going to break some rules.
So,
you know. Be expected, and there's a consequence,
right.
And you move on, you know?
Yeah. But in that scenario, I mean, and I can speak from experience. I was definitely one of those ding-dongs who did that. I was a big culprit in ditching school a lot and ditching with other couples and going to hang out at one couple's house or go to the movies or whatever. I was only caught a few times with my parents. I got away with it a lot. And I was just, Leslie, I just happened to be somebody who was looked at more as the ringleader versus the follower in the group. So I was never, I don't want to say I was never putting myself in compromising situations because that would be a complete lie, but I at least had more control than other people in the group that were ditching because of that. However, it was still stupid. And so, I mean, that's why, you know, I'd say my first would be like, just don't do it, just don't be rich, stay in school. But, you know, I know it's not going to be the case. So my suggestion would be to anybody who's listening that's a teen that just has you listening or is a parent of a teen that knows their kid is going to ditch is if you're going to ditch, at least go somewhere like the mall or the movies so you're at least in a safer environment than at someone's house.
Well, the thing is, if they go to the mall or to the movies and it's during school hours, there's always that chance that, you know, somebody's going
caught,
to see them. They're usually going to try to go somewhere really, really private where they're not
yeah.
seen. You know, in our school, I'm lucky in my school district that actually if your child is not at school, we have attendance people that actually call. And if the child doesn't bring a note, of course, I was good at bringing notes when I was in school signed by my mother.
Yeah, I was too.
Because I could sign her name very well to be excused for an appointment or something at a certain time and out I'd go. But, of course, I work in a 5th, 6th, 7th grade school, so most of our children don't have a car in the parking lot. They can't necessarily leave. But we call, and we've had a few ditch school, even at that age, just stay home, just not catch the bus or go to the bus stop, and then as soon as their parents leave for work, they go back home and either hang out by themselves or with friends. But, you know, we do call the parent. And two, you know, it may be late in the game, but every school, I do believe, will be sending out, you know, report cards and progress reports. And when you see more absences than you know were warranted, that should be a red flag. And at least it gives you a little bit of a heads up. You know, I mean, like you said, kids will be kids. They're going to skip school a time here or there. I don't think that's grounds for crazy. You know, I mean, it just, that's kids. But if it becomes habitual, or if they're going to somewhere unsafe, if it's a couple and they're each time they skip school, they're going to someone's house alone and things are going further and further than they should. And first thing you know, you're going to have a pregnant teenager. I mean, something like that, you kind of need a heads up what's going on there. But who knows? You know, you're going to catch it somewhere. You need to catch it sooner than later if it's something that's going to be destructive and if it's going to be a pattern. If it's just a random here and there, you know, a few times, that's maybe I shouldn't say to be expected, but certainly not of huge alarm. It's just that when kids are out doing their own things like that and unsupervised, so often just near accidents happen, you know, especially if they're in cars. And a lot of times if something does go wrong, everybody's scared to call for help because, after all, they were supposed to be in school. So then they're caught in that little situation. It's tough to be a teenager today, I think, too. Because some of those options weren't even available to us.
I absolutely agree. And, you know, I think about, like, my own experiences and you know, and I'll be honest because I have no problem with it. I'm older. I mean, what am I supposed to do? Growing me now. But, you know, I ditched a few times and went to my boyfriend's house. And, yeah, I got myself and did things I probably shouldn't have done. But, you know, in a sexual manner. But, and I'm not excusing myself. I'm not saying that was a good thing. But I was very fortunate in those situations. And the thing that I think about, you know, with parents, and, I, you know, if you're going to take a playbook at it, I was like, I had four parents. When I say I was like, I had four parents, I had four people keeping their eyes on me, which was probably a good thing. But
probably so.
Yeah.
Thank the village.
But, you know, and like you said, you know, a lot of parents are afraid to embarrass their kids. But, you know, if as a parent, if you're going to take anything out of a parent's playbook, I really think my stepdad is somebody to really mirror. If you have a child, he knew I was ditching. My other three parents like, oh, you know, kids do that. She's not ditching that often. He had a clue that I was a little bit more wild than the other three thought I was. And so what he would do, and pretty much, and I know in like some places, like when I lived out in California, there was no way I could have done this. My husband would have been very easily could have done this with our son because I worked further away from his school than my husband did. But my stepdad happened to be a dentist, and just happened to have a practice not too far from the high school I went to. So he would take his lunch and basically go patrol the streets looking for either myself walking the street because I didn't drive at that time, or any of my friends' cars.
Wow.
To see if I was out. To see if I was out.
Your
and
guardian
you know
angel.
Exactly. And my husband now works for the police department. We just keep telling my son we're going to low jack him, and there'll be no way he'll get away from it because we'll have every single officer on him. But and I know parents don't want to do that, but honestly, if you have, you know, a family member or if you work near your kid, you know, again, in that article I was just talking about that's on WebMD that was also in Good Housekeeping, she brings it up that a lot of teens tend to do more things in the afternoon than we think they do versus the evening. And so if you can take a lunch break every once in a while, I mean, obviously you can't do it all the time because I know we all have to work, but, you know, it might be a smart idea to go just kind of patrol the streets where, you know, your child usually hangs out just to see. Because, I mean, you just might get there to keep them from getting themselves in a bad situation.
You really might, you know. And another thing, you know, on that train of thought, and this is always true, but the closer communication you have, and I know children by the time they get to high school don't want this, but the closer communication you have with your child's school, the more involved you are in the school, number one, the more successful your child academically will be, and statistics prove that every time. But when you know the office secretary, the receptionist, when you pop in there every now and then with a cupcake, or you always speak to him at PTA, or you know your child's teacher, you communicate with that person, or at least one or two of your child's teachers, on a relatively regular basis, that teacher knows a whole lot about your child that you may not know. You know, a lot of times parents are shocked at the child that the teacher knows, and vice versa, because kids can be very different. And there are a lot of things that a teacher knows that perhaps, you know, a parent doesn't. Teachers hear, I know I hear a lot of things about what kids are doing after school and where they're going and what they're doing. And come to find out sometimes the next day when the parents are livid because their child walked home with another child, the parent didn't want to. Well, you know, when they're 13 years old and they're walking home and they take a friend home with them, with a school of 600, 700 kids, we can't necessarily monitor whether your mother wants you to walk home with this child. I mean, that's just not something that we can monitor on a real regular basis. But if we are aware, if that parent comes to us and says, you know, look, I think that my daughter's walking home with her boyfriend and they're at his house from 3 to 5. I don't get off till 5. Could you just let me know if you see them leave campus together? Could you let me know if there's anything going on at school that maybe I should know about? I think that's a great tool, and I think often teachers know things, but we're in a position where, you know, do we call a parent and put our nose in their child's business outside of school? Do we call and tattle and say, well, you know, I think your child is going to her boyfriend's house? I mean, is that appropriate? Is that going to be met with, you know, who do you think you are telling me how to parent? Or is it going to be met with, thank you so much for telling me? And that's a tricky line. So if you have a relationship with your child's teacher or teachers, you'll kind of know. And communication will be much more welcome than just something out of the blue that might be taken the wrong way. So I think the school is a huge ally for parents.
Yeah, you know, it's funny what you just said. It's made me think of this, and I don't know where the quote originally came from. I'm sure somebody will email me after the show and tell me. But I've heard it time and time again. I've heard it on shows. I've heard it on other talk shows that have addressed this situation. I've seen it in articles, but it's a really true statement that it does take a village to raise a child. Because
Hillary
as a parent, I know she said it, but
yeah,
it was I heard it way before her. I heard it way before
Hillary.
Oh,
okay,
Hillary.
Then she must have gotten it from someone else.
Yeah, because I heard this back when I was a kid. But it is a very true statement, and I'm sure it probably came from some Indian who told some, like, white person. By the way, that's why, you know, it takes our whole village to raise our kids, because, you know, and it used to be, I think the original quote was, it takes a village to raise a man, is what the Indian quote is, actually. But it's a true statement, because as a parent, you can't have your eyes on the kids at all times, which brings me to the next thing about where dating's different from when we were dating and from when our parents were dating, seeing our, you know, kids and grandkids, you know, as they start dating, is, you know, we have the internet now, and, you know, we have the cell phones, and we have, you know, so we have texting, and we have the whole emailing or social networking sites. And it's, the statistic out there is 1 in 5 relationships start online. And I don't know if that number is, it's probably, it slowly is actually changing from that number to a little bit higher number, but that's what the statistic was the last time I looked, and it was, that's what the statistic was 8 years ago when I actually met my now husband, and which I did meet online, so I can talk about this subject easily. But I think that a lot of parents don't realize that even though their kids may not have a boyfriend or girlfriend in their school locally, some of them, and they're, because, you know, they take the relationships they have online just as deeply as they do as in-person relationships. Because I know a lot of teens now don't, you know, depending on wherever, you know, wherever they rank, which I know we talked about last month when we were talking about bullying, that, you know, you have your preppy kids and you have your, you know, jocks and you have, you know, the geek squad and, you know, you got all the different social classes and cliques within the schools. That I think because a lot of kids are being driven to the internet to find like-minded people, and because you have that computer screen in front of you, you can be anybody easily.
Absolutely,
you know.
And so can the person on the other side.
Exactly.
So a lot
and
of those
so
they're not.
It's here because. Yeah, because you don't know. I mean, I use my pen name, V.S. Grenier. I use it here on the show. I mean, obviously, people listening to the show can tell I'm a female, but for the longest time when I was writing, most people thought I was a guy because I was using initials. I'm not. I'm a girl. And I didn't do that to try and mislead anybody. I just did it because I didn't want anybody to know what my gender was, period. You know, my gender was, period. I didn't want them to know too much about me as I was building my career because I was trying to keep my younger kids safe. But, the reality is, I mean, you don't know somebody calling themselves Jill is really Jack and vice versa out there online.
If they're really 10 or 15, they might be 48.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up because my husband the other day was doing a training class, and he was actually talking on this very subject about the cyber world and people cyber dating because it is becoming a more common practice, and teens are jumping on this bandwagon. And so life of me, I can't remember the name of the movie, and I asked him, he's like, you know, I just watched it and I can't remember it, but there was a movie, and I think it was like on Lifetime, and it's a true story, actually, but this mom posted the picture of her teenage daughter online and started courting a guy who was in his 20s and a guy who was married in his 40s, and flirting with both of them, and then with it wasn't intentional, but it ended up where the two guys ended up found out about each other, and the older guy killed the younger guy. And it got really nasty. And then, of course, when the cops showed up at the house, lo and behold, it wasn't even the teenage daughter. It was the mom who was pretending to be the teenage daughter and the whole scenario. But the thing was, this love triangle that was happening online, they were emotionally involved. Even though they had never seen each other in person, never talked on the phone or anything, they were emotionally involved, and I think that that's happening with teenagers as well, you know, where they are getting emotionally, you know, and I know kids hear all the time, you know, don't give out your personal information, don't share, you know, too much about yourself, but in those scenarios, they do, because they're now personally, emotionally attached to whoever
they do think that way, and very often, I mean, Like you said, a lot of times an older person can present themselves as somebody younger and really charm a younger person. You know, a 35-year-old man knows exactly a lot of things he could say to a young lady that would be extremely flattering, that would be probably a little bit different than what her 16-year-old peers might say. You know, he might have a little edge on how to say just the right things. He can post a gorgeous picture. A lot of girls are lured right out of their homes, and horrible things can happen. But another thing that often happens is the sexting begins, the sending of inappropriate material. And when teens start, you know, a lot of, and this is probably an entire topic in itself, but a lot of teens, no matter how many times you say it, still don't realize that when you send pictures over the internet or over your cell phone, they are never completely gone. And if your boyfriend or girlfriend convinces you that it's a good idea to send a picture of you nude or partially nude to them because, you know, they love you so, that can go anywhere. It can be broadcast anywhere. When you break up, it could go anywhere. Accidentally, it could go anywhere. And if you're dealing with a minor and an adult, even if it's an 18- and 16-year-old relationship, which really isn't anything wrong with that, although it crosses the line, so to speak, there are child pornography laws. And, you know, if you're carrying around a picture of a naked 14-year-old that's your girlfriend and you're 19 or 18 even, I don't know how hard the law is going to come down on you, but technically that's child pornography. And there are a lot of states now that have juvenile sexual offender registries. Now, they don't always, you know, gather some of these types of things. They're more looking for violent teen offenders and such. But if you end up with on that juvenile sexual offender registry, and I would hope it would be for more than sexting, you can have all – that's you can lose scholarships. You can be asked not to be in certain places where teens are. If you have to register on the street, that can be kind of humiliating and such. So the sexting needs to really be thought long and hard. That's not wise even for an adult. I mean, look at the trouble our adult leaders have been in. Look at Mr. Weiner. You know, you'd think somebody that age, you know, that in that stature would have better sense. So, you know, if he can allow himself to get carried away and many other notables, certainly a teen is vulnerable to doing something foolish like that. So they just need to be warned and warned and warned. Don't do that. It could go anywhere. It's out of your hands. It might as well be on the news because it could appear there. You have no more control once you hit that send button.
Yeah, my husband just came in, so I was writing him a note to find out if he could remember the name of the show, and he actually did. So anybody who's listening, the name of the show, which would be a great show to watch with your kids, I mean, I know it didn't involve an actual teenager, but this kind of stuff can happen at, you know, teenage level to young adult level to obviously this mom pulling this off. But it was called Tall, Hot, Blonde is the name of the
Tall,
movie.
Tall, Hot, Blonde?
Tall, Hot, Blonde. And it's an actual true story. I don't remember what state it happened in. I do know the mom got arrested, though, and was charged for it, just like that one mom who got charged for the cyberbullying type thing. But, you know, it is becoming – yeah, I mean, it's a huge problem, and it's really scary. And exactly, if one of the things that, you know, we have our son watch every so often, and not because we're, like, trying to freak him out or anything, just because we want him educated is – I think it's Dateline does the How to Catch a Predator, and it's exactly this. It's my son's like, I watched that intentionally, but it's where they have undercover cops, you know, doing the whole internet, pretending they're kids to try and catch the perps that are out there looking for kids to lure them out, and then they have children actors who will, you know, answer the door and stuff, and lure the person into the house, and once they get in the house.
The whole scenario happens, of course,
where they're in trouble. But, you know, I think it's important for parents every so often to just turn it on and say, hey, you know, there's an interesting show and I want you to watch it, because I think kids think, which I know they don't, I shouldn't say I think they do, I know they think this way. A lot of kids think they're invincible and it would never happen to them. I mean, I never thought of all the things I put myself in that anything bad would ever happen to me. And I put myself in worse situations than my friend ever did. I mean, she was by the book probably one of the best, you know, if you could have a by the book teenager to raise, she was it. She never did. She was a straight A student, you know, but she. I was not that way. I was the opposite. But my friend was that way. And she ended up, like I said, dated this guy for a whole year. Her parents knew his parents. They went to church together and she still got compromised by her boyfriend. You know, it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter if you're a poor kid or rich kid. You know, your parents are divorced, aren't divorced. You know, it doesn't matter. And her dad actually happened to be an officer.
Did she press charges against him?
She did. Her dad happened to be an officer, which is what actually shocked Living Todd to me, that this guy even tried to do this. Or actually did do it to her.
Did he do time? Was he arrested?
Oh, he was arrested. Her dad worked for the sheriff department out where they live. So the fact that this guy even did this to my friend, just like completely, I'm just like, are you an idiot? You knew her dad was an officer of the law. You're a retard. I mean, obviously this guy thought he was going to get away with it, you know. I guess he thought, oh, well, you know, everybody loves me. Her parents love me. They want to, you know. And he tried to pass it off that she went upstairs with somebody else and that she got drunk. I mean, she's never ever had alcohol a day in her life. I mean, even to this day into her adulthood, she does not drink. And so when he tries to say she got drunk at the party and that, you know, she just kind of, and she said, she, you know, she was going to go lay down upstairs and then he saw some people go up there and he didn't think anything of it. You know, he was trying to pass off that it wasn't him, but it was.
Yeah.
You know, obviously because it all came back. But I was just like, this guy was a moron. I mean, he just, don't go after a cop's daughter. That's just stupidity in itself. You know, he did. So, yeah, he just walked himself into a whole world of hurt. But, you know, the thing is and I think, unfortunately for my friend, I think that because her dad was an officer, I think it gave, you know, and she'd been dating this guy for a year, it gave her a little bit of false security going into that party a little bit, you know, because I know for me, I wouldn't care if I was dating the guy, you know, when I was dating my husband, who I'm married to now, I would not take an open drink from him, ever, you know, until we were engaged. And even then, I would, you know, kind of hesitate because I just knew that it didn't matter, you know, anything can happen. And, you know, and I came out of an abusive relationship for my son's father. So I think that also kind of always kept me on my toes a little bit more than in my adult life when I started dating again, just because of that. But, you know, it doesn't matter. I don't care if you're 12 years old, if you're, you know, 35 years old and dating. The reality is, you know, you really can't 100% trust anybody out there.
No, but there are some signs, and I wonder if when your friend, if she ever looks back, and I don't know that she does, but if she ever looked back and maybe remembered some things that, in hindsight, because there probably were some small hints that she would may have been too young to even pick up on. Somebody to rape them, you know, that kind of behavior doesn't just pop up one night. There are typically some signs that you might not recognize, but as an adult, if she could even remember, I wonder if she's ever looked back and thought, well, you know, he was a little controlling, or he was a little this or that, or
he was possessive. You know, I know for me from looking back, because, you know, she doesn't really talk about it at all. And, you know, she's put it behind her and has moved on with her life. You know, so I, as a friend, I don't bring it up at all. But I know, like, for me, when I look back, and I even look back, like, the few months afterwards when we would talk about what happened. I mean, he was possessive. When I mean he was possessive, I mean, he wasn't trying to control and pull away from her family at all. I mean, he was very involved, you know, where she was involved with his family activities and he was involved with her family activities. But he was possessive in the fact that when a guy looked at her, he didn't like it. He was definitely possessive in that way. You know, he didn't like guys noticing her at all. And he was always, and I want to say he was like touching her inappropriately, but he was always touching her, you know, like where he would, you know, always slightly, you know, graze his hand across her cheek. You know, things that most girls would think, oh, you know, you wouldn't think anything of. But the problem was he did it too much and too often. Sort of looking back at certain things, and, you know, he want from the get go, sex was on his mind, and she just wasn't cluing into, you know, the flirtatious moves, because that's just not her as a person. I mean, she was just completely oblivious to it. I mean, she was young too. I mean, this happened when she was 15. I mean, so, you know, totally oblivious to it. The thing is. There was definitely things, and I look back at, you know, other boyfriends that I've dated. I mean, you know, guys that, you know, constantly putting their hand on my butt, or, you know, always had their hand on my knee when we sat next to each other. You know, I always look over those guys because they made me uncomfortable, and it was probably a good thing. Because the reality was, is, you know, they were being a little, even though they weren't touching me inappropriately, it was still a little too much touchy-feely.
Yeah.
So
those are all some little signs that you just kind of let you know when somebody is that clingy, that in your face. I mean, I don't know that you have to be necessarily older to pick up on it. I think that if it's your first couple of relationships, maybe you think that's how it's supposed to be, but it isn't, and I think that we all have a little built-in something that kind of lets us know, and maybe it varies with many people as far as what they're willing to accept and what they're not, but when somebody just, you know, like you said, it's not necessarily touching inappropriate, it's just a little too much. It's just a little uncomfortable. When it's a little bit uncomfortable, you need to be able to figure out what's uncomfortable about it and address it. And if it's not taken well, then that's a sign, because you have a right to be comfortable in the relationship. And if somebody's doing something that makes you uncomfortable and they care about you truly and you express it, the natural thing for them to do is say, oh, wow, you know, I didn't know that made you uncomfortable. I won't do that anymore. And it stops. But somebody who has got these tendencies to be manipulative and down the line abusive is not going to stop because you said it made you uncomfortable. They're going to shut you down. They're going to be the victim, and you're the bad guy for saying such a thing. They're going to tell you that you're imagining things. They're going to tell you, oh, they just love you and can't keep their hands off. All those things are going to come into play to try to manipulate you into seeing things their way instead of maintaining your boundaries, whatever they may be. And you have a right to whatever boundaries you are comfortable with. That's for your side and not the person that you're dating.
Yeah, I agree. I just want to let everybody know that if you did hear me kind of snicker for a second, I was not snickering what you were saying, Keisha. We have our dog's crate in here when we crate him at night or when we leave the house, and my baby just crawled into it, and I found that kind of funny. So I was not laughing at what you were saying. I was laughing at my daughter climbing into the dog's crate.
That's okay. There are probably a lot of parents
that wish they had a dog crate. Baby into a crate.
No, I don't.
Yeah, but I agree, you know, and I think that's one thing as parents that we need to really instill into our kids as they start dating. And I'm not telling parents, you know, what age to let your kids start dating. You know, I know some parents are like, oh, my kids can't start. Like with my dad, when my sister came along, she could not single date until she was 18. She could only, like, double date or group date, and that was starting at age 16, which I was just looking, I'm like, what are you talking about? You guys let me go out when I was 14. You know, what changed in 15 years? You know, and that wasn't group dating at 14. They let me go one-on-one on a date. But, you know, obviously he changed his mind, and I don't blame him as my sister came along, because things had definitely changed from when I was in school to being a lot worse, and kids doing a lot more crazy things than when I was in school. Or I shouldn't say kids weren't doing that. More kids were starting to do it versus smaller groups, I guess. But I definitely think it's important for parents to build their children up and, you know, to tell them, you know, if you feel uncomfortable, you know, like you're saying, you know, to speak up and to make a stand and to be a leader and not worry about what your friends think or what your boyfriend or girlfriend thinks, because, you know, you got to protect you. And I'll actually talk about a scenario that happened to me when I was in school. I was not dating this guy, but I took wood shop. And I was very fortunate that my parents, you know, had started instilling that into me, you know, to speak my mind, to stand my ground, you know, not get pushed around to, you know, if someone, you know, starts beating me down, making a comment, well, you know, no one's going to believe you or whatever, you know, whatever people say to make you feel like you can't go to somebody, to not buy into it. And I was fortunate, because when I was in workshop, there was a guy who was really into me and really wanted to date me, and more than that probably because of what he did. But, he creeped me out, full on creeped me out. So we unfortunately had wood shop together, and we have a locker in wood shop. We had a locker room, and if anybody's ever been in wood shop, if you have a locker room or a paint room, it's a room you have to shut off and make it airtight, because otherwise the fumes go out into the whole entire place, and it intoxicates everybody. Well, I had a locker project, and I was always really good about locking the door behind me when I went in there by myself, so nobody could get in there. Well, I didn't realize it, but this guy ended up putting paper or something into the lock. So the door, even though I thought it was shut, wasn't shut all the way, so he could pull it open. And he tried. Now our show's getting ready to tell us that we're getting to the end. Anyways, he tried to attack me in there, and I of course fought him off me, and I came out right away and went straight to the teacher and said what happened. But I think about that scenario. I thought about that scenario the whole entire rest of my life when I was a teen and got into dating situations. So I was like, if that could happen with some guy that I wasn't even into, what would happen if I put my guard down because I like somebody? And so I think that's what really helped me, you know, keep my wits about me. But, I think it's very important, like you said, you know, for you to listen to that gut instinct of kids and stuff, you know, to if somebody creeps you out, you know, get out of the situation, do whatever you have to do, you know, don't worry about anybody, because I think that's the key. And obviously having open communication with your parents or with someone you trust as a teen so you can talk about what's going on in any relationship you're in.
Yeah, and that is a good point. You know, if it's not your parent, find somebody that you do trust, a trusted adult. There are a lot of them out there. If it's not your parent, there is somebody.
Yeah. Well, we need to wrap up the show because we're getting to the end. We have, like, a few seconds left, so we're going to probably get cut off on the live on the live stream because we have 10 seconds. But I want to thank everybody for listening. It was great talking to you, Keisha. You always are a wealth of information. So, you know, thank you for doing
this
show with me.
I just wanted to tell everybody, if they want to visit my, I'm also an author, Nashville Parenting Examiner, and I do have a Safe Dates article on there. So.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, I really want everybody to go check you out because you do. You have a lot of great articles on this subject, on other subjects. And you can also find out more about myself, D.S. Grenier, and Keisha on our blog, theworldofinknetwork.blogspot.com. It's our new blog for our whole entire World of Ink Network here on Blog Talk Radio. And we will be back next month with another topic. So tune in. We're going to try and do our shows on the third Wednesday of every month at 6 p.m. Eastern time. So thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks again, Keisha, for doing the show with me. And have a good night. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you.
Me to the world of ink.